Lucky Strike presents Your Hit Parade, starring Frank Sinatra.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
And now, smile a while with Lorenzo Jones and his wife, Belle.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
This is the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Dick Bertel, and tonight we'll take you on another audio excursion back to radio's formative years. You'll hear the programs that made the era golden, and meet people who made those broadcasts a reality.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by WTIC and the Cromwell Savings Bank, a friendly bank in a friendly town. Now, here are your hosts, Ed Cochran and Dick Bertel.
Well, Ed, we travel out to Hollywood tonight, don't we?
Yeah, my second venture out to the West in 2 years, Dick, and it was a very pleasant trip, I must say.
Well, it certainly was rewarding from our standpoint here on the Golden Age of Radio.
Well, I was hoping to do a little better. I had people like William Conrad, Jack Webb, Harry Von Zell, and Clifton Fadiman on my list, but they were all out of town or unavailable, so I think I did come up with some pretty good people, though, even though we didn't get them.
Well, you made the right connection. You made the right phone call. Where was that?
Well, a friend of mine who was a technician on tape recorders told me that Les Tremaine had dropped the machine off a week before to have it repaired. So I called him, and it turned out he was the secretary of the Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters, which is, of course, a very, very big group, and we'll talk about that maybe later. And he invited me over, and I got to meet him, and that's kind of how the thing got started in the first place. But there's a little more to it than that. They have a group there from Chicago, all Chicago actors. You'll hear four of them on this tape. There were several others that we didn't get to bring in. Ed Prentice, for one, Jonathan Hole, and several others. They have a little club. They meet every 2 weeks in a little restaurant right off Hollywood and Vine. And they invited me over, so we had a chat, and then I got four of them to come with me back to their headquarters, and we made this tape, Dick.
And can you tell us a bit about them, who they are, and so on?
Well, the Les Tremaine is the one who is kind of the group discussion leader. He was on The First Nighter and many other radio shows. He was also in the movies in War of the Worlds, if you remember that movie. He was a general in that particular one.
Mm-hmm.
Betty Lou Gerson, who is a very famous soap opera queen and who has a very theatrical voice, I might add. I mean, you can tell right away she's in show business. Brett Morrison, who, of course, was the Shadow and also the First Nighter. And Vincent Pelletier, really one of the really fine radio announcers. So we got together, and then I turned the show over to Les.
Thank you, Ed. I think it's wonderful that you would come out here all the way from Hartford, Connecticut, to try to round up some of us. I might say that a little earlier we had quite a group together, but I don't know what happened. They sort of cooled off and ran away. But we do have some fine people here, a wonderful surprise. We have Betty Lou Gerson.
Thank you, sir.
Who was, I believe, leading lady on The First Nighter right after June Meredith left it, weren't you?
Yes, I think it was somewhere close to the turn of the century, darling.
No, I didn't.
You're ready to now.
Turn of the screw, maybe,
about
the century.
No, it was at the end of 35 and the beginning of 36 when June Meredith and Charles B. Hughes left the show, and I took June's place, and in those days, Francis X. Bushman was Mr. First Nighter, but sitting right next to me was probably our most distinguished and famous First Nighter, and that's Brett Morrison.
How do you do?
This is the man who was talking about the turn of the screw.
Don't forget my seat on the aisle, please.
Yeah. Yes, that's very good. And next to Brett, we have one of the finest announcers who ever graced the airways, and a dear old friend of all of ours, a man who was staff at NBC for nigh on 40 years.
Mm.
Vincent Pelletier, Vinny Pelletier.
I acknowledge everything but the 40-year record. I want to thank
your
you.
Speech.
Thank you for your declaration of friendship, and I hope that even though if I live to be 60, I shall be able to live up to some of the nice things you said about me. And I extend my greetings to the people in the area which you represent, Mr. Cochran. And I hope that you go back there with our best wishes and that it rubs off on everybody who ever listens.
Now, there you see, this is an audition for an announcer. Right away, he starts to add myth.
Can you tell us of some of the fantastic awards you won for best announcing? I know that was the first thing I ever heard about you, was that you won. I know there was a Peabody Award, and there were so many of them as the best announcer back when I was a child.
I love that. Strangely enough, Betty Lou, I had never been the recipient of any of the going awards at that time. The Peabody Award I had been nominated for, at the Better Speech Awards of various different groups.
But you never won one?
But I never won one formally.
You should have.
You certainly should have, because everyone, good heavens, everyone, you know, you always were everyone's idea of what the ideal announcer should sound like. And that's right.
Well, that's right. Very nice to hear, and a nice compliment, and I thank you for
mentioning that. Ben, how long were you with NBC?
I started in Chicago in 1931, and I stayed there for only 4 years on the staff before I found it more financially attractive to freelance.
Oh, I see. I don't know why I had the impression that you had been on the staff of NBC for years and years and years.
When did we do Carnation thing together? Vinny and I co-announcers, it was on that.
The Carnation Hour?
Carnation Contented Hour, you know.
Yes.
Was that when Joe was producing? For
yes.
Yes. What year?
Joe Ainley bless his
dear
soul.
He was my deceased husband, in case all you people in Hartford wonder.
He was also the great director, and he directed the First Nighter program for years and years and years.
Yeah.
Didn't he direct a lot of us in
yes,
most of our efforts?
Yeah, he was a dear friend of all of us.
Believe me, I bow in the direction of Joe Ainley for some of the successes that I've enjoyed over the years.
Hear, hear.
Amen to that, yes.
You know, I would love to tell, if there's a moment, if I'm not taking up too much time, one of the things that Joe said to me when he was directing me in the First Nighter, we were doing, Hugh Studebaker and I were doing the leads of Mary Todd Lincoln and Abraham Lincoln, and the more we got into it, the more deeply involved and emotional I became, and at the end of the rehearsal, Joe came out and personally thanked me. He said, I think you've done a great job for the audience. You feel so sorry for yourself that you've left them no place to go at all. And we're on the air. We're boom on the air.
Well, it was a very telling type of direction this man had.
He cleaned up my performance immediately. Mm-hmm. It was one of the best things I ever did, because
sure,
I started from scratch as we went on, you know, saying, simplify, simplify.
Yeah.
Well, Betty, a lot of people remember your voice from the soap opera days, and could you just tell us some of the soaps you performed in?
I'll give you some of the names. Yes, Mary Marlin was one of my very, very favorite. Of course, Joan Blaine was the original, and then Ann Seymour was the second. I was the third Mary Marlin. I also was on Guiding Light, Woman in White. I'm trying to remember them all. Today's Children, Way of Life.
Did you ever play Jack Armstrong?
I think I played a small part.
If she had, I bet she'd have won.
For Hudson High.
Yes, sir. She could play anybody.
Alvin's Daughter. Oh, good heavens, they stretched out. I think I was
together.
I must have done the lead in 8 or 10 or 12. Oh, there was Aunt Sue in Flying Time.
I'm sorry, we can't have
that. Can't have
Flying Time. You know, you're mentioning Arnold's Grim Daughter. We had favorite names for a lot of these shows, Back House Wife.
Yes.
John's Other John. I don't know what the name said.
Elsie Beebe, you remember that one?
Oh, yeah. That was lovely.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was married to Alice Reinhardt for some 16 years, who played Chi Chi on Life with You. She created the role. Yeah.
And was my magnificent actress, if I may say.
Yes, thank you.
And still is.
Yes, indeed she is.
Here, here. Let's not bury anybody here. Ed, what do you want to know specifically about any of us?
Well, the question that I think the audience is just dying to hear is, whatever happened to the shadow? Now, maybe we could find out.
Gee, I don't know, but I think we have a fellow here who used to play it, Brett Morrison.
Well, the shadow's a little more substance to this.
Bravo.
Yeah, but I don't know. I often wonder myself whatever happened to him. He's still kicking around and still playing on, unfortunately, I'll say, in some ways, because so many of those tapes are pirated and are being exploited, and unfortunately the performers don't get anything for it.
May I say something here, Brad? I am co-chairman of a committee in AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, that has been looking into this problem for quite some time, a year or so. We've run up against a lot of stone walls, but I would like to say here that we don't mind people, individuals, collecting all the shows for themselves or even to swap with other people.
Right.
You know, everybody has swap clubs of old cars, old this, old that.
Yeah.
The thing we resent and are trying to prevent is radio stations buying these things from the opportunistic charlatans who are selling them around the country.
Well, they are.
And
that's exactly
putting them on commercial programs without any recompense whatsoever to the performers. Right.
Do you realize you can go to Wallach's Music Store and on 8-track tape, you can buy Sam Spade. I'm on about 10 or 20 of them. Ma Perkins, all of these. And I think it's perfectly dreadful because it is piracy.
Well, we're working on it. Believe me, we are.
And they're working on it in New York, too. They feel the same way, because of the...
But it's so difficult to police. You see, this is the problem. You just can't. Now, I have picked up, in two instances, on broadcasts, one on TV and one on radio, commercials that were done with excerpts taken out of the shadow. Mm-hmm. I reported them to AFTRA, and they followed them up, and in both instances, it didn't happen to be my shows that I had done, Bill Johnstone, who was the shadow just before me.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them happened to be Bill Johnstone, and Bill Johnstone collected residuals as a result of that. But this was just a question of policing. It was just pure chance that I happened to pick it up, you see. And this is the problem that we have.
Well, obviously, Ed, from the way Les is talking, they are concerned about this situation of old shows being played on the air. But by the same token, the Pacific Pioneer broadcasters were very nice about providing us with some material to represent them tonight.
Yes, they have the largest collection in the world of radio recordings, and they were very nice to let us borrow a few. And the one that I think we could start off with would be The First Nighter, because this features two of the guests. It features Les Tremaine in a starring role and Brett Morrison as the Master of Ceremonies.
Makers of Campana products present the First Nighter program, a copyrighted feature coast to coast. Theater time and a new play scheduled for the Little Theater off Times Square. An opening night on the Great White Way is the kind of gala event that never fails to attract people from far and near. Sightseers will crowd the sidewalks of the theater, and streams of automobiles and taxicabs will give the traffic officers a strenuous evening. So let's get started early. We want to be in our seats on time. Now, here's my cab. All right, driver, up Broadway. Well, here we are.
Have your tickets ready, please. Have your tickets ready, please.
Good evening, Mr. First Nighter. Curtain in 2 minutes. Thank you. We'll go right in. All right, let's look over our theater program. I see that tonight's new play is entitled Run Up and Cry Lucky, a romantic drama by Jesse Sandler, co-starring Barbara Luddy and Les Tremaine. The play is pure fiction, of course, and does not refer to real people or to actual events. And now, before first curtain, here is Eric Segerquist with his famous orchestra. Cut! Cut! Cut!
There's a signal for first curtain. The house lights are out. And here's the play.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Venus Theatre. Our regular patrons know that every Tuesday night we have lots of fun playing Lucky.
A double feature isn't bad enough. They have to torture us with childish games.
I beg your pardon. Were you speaking to me?
I was giving the world the benefit of my opinion.
Oh.
Each of you has a card. As we spin a wheel, mark the number announced on your card. If you mark five numbers in a row, yell Lucky and run up on the stage here as fast as you can.
Oh, why doesn't he get on with the game? Doesn't he think anyone ever played bingo before?
In this theater, it's called Lucky.
The bingo, screen all Lucky, it's still the same old swindle.
I won $5 once.
Aha! Caught like a fish on a hook. And how often did you have to go to the movies to win that measly $5?
Well, I notice you've got a card yourself, mister.
It was stuffed in my hand at the door. Here, you can have it.
All right, I'll take it. I hope I win, just to show you.
Win? Well, your brain.
One thing more. If you happen to get lucky in the first five spins of the wheel, you win the grand prize of $500. Ready? Away we go. The wheel spins round and round and stops at number 54.
You see, it's on my card.
Oh, they're teasing you.
We stop at number 7.
Look, number 7.
An accident. Don't you realize the odds against winning?
96. 78.
Oh.
Now for the fifth. Spin. Here we go. The wheel stops at 35.
Oh, Lucky, Lucky, Lucky.
Did someone cry Lucky? Will the young lady bring her card up here?
It's not true. They can't do this.
The young lady has Lucky across the board. She wins $500.
Why should this happen to me? Why? Why?
Step up to the microphone, miss, and tell us your name and what you're going to do with the money.
My name is Katie Miller. I'm not sure what I'll do with the money, but I mean to spend every cent having some good time.
But, oh!
What was that? That terrible growl?
It sounded like somebody fainting. Someone I know.
The First Nighter program. Well, that takes us back a few years. We'll get back to our guests, and we have a number of them tonight here on the Golden Age of Radio, right after this message from our sponsor.
Family expanding? Need more living space? If the answer to these questions is yes, then now, during the spring of the year, is the ideal time to visit Cromwell Savings Bank and discuss a home improvement loan. Perhaps you plan to finish an uncompleted room, add another bathroom or a dormer. Get going on that long overdue addition to your present home. In any case, the folks at Cromwell Savings Bank will be most happy to discuss your home expansion plans with you and possibly help make your dreams become a reality. Stop in any time at Cromwell Savings Bank, conveniently located at the corner of Main and West Streets in Cromwell. Or, if you prefer, call for an appointment. Cromwell Savings is open Monday through Wednesday from 9 to 3, Thursdays from 9 to 5, Fridays from 9 to 7:30, and now Saturdays from 9 to 12 noon. Let them show you how a Cromwell home improvement loan may take the cramp out of your family's lifestyle. Cromwell Savings Bank, a member of FDIC, is an equal housing lender. And now back to Ed Corcoran and Dick Bertel.
Ed Corcoran, as we told you earlier, was in Hollywood in California, and actually to do tonight's program with the Pacific Pioneer Broadcasters, made up, as you indicated, Ed, of the Chicago School. What did you find out about the Chicago School?
Well, they felt they were a different breed. They felt that as a group, they were more friendly than West Coast or East Coast performers, and they seemed to be willing to help each other out, you know, and they have a certain camaraderie that maybe is lacking, and there was no professional jealousies, and really a very, very nice group, and typical of the fine people you meet in show business, because they really are all great. The ones I've met are anyway, Dick.
Well, of course, I did have the opportunity to speak with Brett Morrison when he was here at the convention in, I guess it was 1972, the SAVE convention in New Haven. And I'd like to be brought up to date.
Well, his fortunes have taken a turn for the worse in this respect, that when we talked to him, he was very active in dubbing foreign films, as you recall. In fact, there were a deluge of them at that time, maybe a couple hundred every year. But now the industry has come up with these hour-long or hour-and-a-half TV movies made for TV, and they just cut the thing down to practically nothing. So he said they used to have five studios in New York, and now they're down to one that are doing this kind of work. So that's really what it is. But let's have Brett himself tell us what it's all about, because this is what I asked him, and this is what he said.
Well, I'm doing whatever I can. I mean, whatever they call me. I do commercials occasionally, and even some as The Shadow. And I do pictures. I do TV shows.
Yeah, you were. Didn't you do the dubbing of War and Peace?
Yes, one of the versions
of it. I guess the Russian version of it, wasn't it?
Right.
The one you did?
Right.
Well, that was a lifetime's career, right?
Just about. Well, for 18 years, I was in New York as writer, director, and actor in the dubbing of foreign films. There were only six of us in the country who were qualified to do the all three. It's a fascinating kind of work, very meticulous and very exacting. And I've just finished 4 days of work, similar type of thing, revoicing for a picture which has just been done by John Milius called The Wind and the Lion over at MGM, a co-production on that.
Yes, I remember. I ran into you the next day. As a matter of fact, we worked together the day after you finished this little stint. And your voice was having a little difficulty.
Nothing but screaming, being killed and shot at and everything else.
And the day I had referred to, Brett and myself and Marvin Miller and
Barney Phillips.
Read a play by Norman Corwin, which is to be produced on Broadway, I guess this coming season. And John Houseman, I understand, is going to direct it.
Oh.
For the bicentennial.
Yes, it's historical in nature. And we read for about 8.5 hours there without a break.
Right.
And poor Brett, the voice was beginning to go downhill.
I almost called them and told them to replace me because I had laryngitis.
You did a bang-up job.
The day before.
As
you
did.
Eddie,
what are you doing now?
Well, I am married to a gentleman who owns answering services for actors. We own RATE, which stands for Radio Artists and Television Exchange, and we also have many other answering services. So, and I'm down there a great deal of the time, and then whenever I'm asked, I appear on either radio, what little there is, and there's very little of it.
You didn't mention your husband's name.
Louis Laurier. God bless him. I mentioned Rate, though.
Is that his name? Louis?
Louis Rate.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, he's from Waterbury, Connecticut.
Those of you listeners who have never seen a picture of Betty Lou Gerson and don't know what she looks like, if you look at Glenda Jackson, she looks and sounds exactly like Glenda Jackson.
I think that
reminds me of that
she looks like Betty Lou Gerson, I think is a better way to put it.
I just wanted to give them a picture because she looks exactly like Glenda Jackson, and I think she's as good an actress as Glenda Jackson.
Hey, Betty,
I'll take that. I'll tell you one thing I did, if any of you saw it and took your children to it, I did the voice of Cruella de Vil on 101 Dalmatians for Walt Disney when he was still alive, and that was really fun. Mm-hmm. And they liked it so much while we were doing it that they began to draw the pictures more and more, you know, like me.
like people.
As I understand, you gave a spotty performance.
Not only that, 101 Dalmatians.
It's rather Dalmatian.
You weren't going to the dark.
Yes, I was. I don't think any of you are funny.
It's a puppy love.
Yeah.
If this could go on,
it's
a little sick, you know.
Well, this is the type of humor that we grew up with at home, and we hope that our friends will understand it, because this is the type of thing that keeps us moving.
You know, Benny, I don't think we could do any wrong, truly. I, no matter where I go in this country, and I'm sure it's happened to all of us, you run into friends.
That's right.
People who have known you for 30, 40 years, and remember you just like that for one particular show, whichever one you happen to be identified with. Mine, for instance, was The First Nighter. And wherever I go, people mention that above everything else I've ever done. Well, it's the same with me with the shadow.
Motion picture.
You know, Wanda, they mentioned so much to me, and I'm amazed, because it was beautiful, but it didn't stay on that long.
You know,
it was the Mr. President show with Edward Arnold, and Miss Sarah there. And that seems, and yet it was, you know, a short duration. The other things were, of course, Guiding Light was another one that was, you know, very, very popular.
Well, you see, I imagine you got billing on that show, did you not?
Oh, yes.
Well, you see, that's the difference, as on The First Nighter.
Yes.
The people who were lucky enough, truly lucky enough, as Betty and I were on the shows we've just mentioned, were known by our names. Now, case in point, Alice Reinhardt, whom we mentioned, who was Chi-Chi on Life Can Be Beautiful. Everybody knew her as Chi-Chi, and when we often do personal appearances, and when she's introduced as Alice Reinhardt, there's a smattering of applause. But when you say, Chi-Chi, of Life Can Be... The house comes
down. That's right. That's right.
Now, years ago, she petitioned Procter & Gamble, the sponsor, and asked that she be given billing on the show. And they had a very succinct answer. They said, we're selling soap, not actors. Period. Shortly after.
Don't you remember Astra went to battle for us, and once a week, it was no oftener than once a week, but once a week the cast got mentioned.
Yes.
And
well,
of course, if you were the star of the show, then you were on that day.
Mm-hmm. I think the main reason they did that was because they felt that if once you became identified by name with a show, that you might demand more money, and that if they wanted to let you go and replace you with somebody else, which they've done throughout the years, this way, you know,
Nowadays
the audience would forget.
This replacement thing, I'm sure it's happened to all of us. It's happened. Yes, it has happened. And it's a terrible thing to have hanging over you when you first begin to do a show that someone else has become famous in.
Yes.
I followed Don Ameche in four different parts. And each time, it didn't get easier, you know, until finally I started doing the lead in the First Nighter program, and for a while there. May I tell a little story about that which I have seldom told?
Certainly.
Why not?
Ameche, as we all know, was the glamour boy in radio. And here he was, he had just about all the work he could handle. Well, he finally left Chicago and went to the coast, Hollywood, and picked up with the Chasing Sanborn show with Edgar Bergen and so on. And then he no longer was going to do the First Nighter. Okay, truly, they started looking everywhere for a leading man. They didn't know what to do. They looked in New York, they looked to Chicago, they looked on the coast. Now, at this point, I was doing the lead on their other half-hour show, Grand Hotel. But they never came near me. And one day I said to myself, what the heck is going on here? And I went to him and I said, look, here I am, I'm doing your other show. If I'm good enough for that, at least you might listen to me. They said, oh, that's a great idea. So I immediately went down to RCA, which was in the Merchandise Mart, where we did a lot of recordings. And I said to dear Betty Mitchell, who was sort of a little mother to all the actors, you know, I said, Betty, please, let me have a couple of records of Don. I've worked with him a lot, I know him, but I want to listen to him specifically for a purpose. He says, what's going on, honey? Tell me about it. So I said, well, I'm going up to audition for the lead on First Nighter. She said, oh, good, here. And she gives me a couple of 16-inchers, and I go into a studio, and I listen to these things. I then immediately go upstairs to NBC on the 19th floor of the same building, and I audition for them. One long speech, that's all. And I did everything, including his laugh. You know. And lo and behold, I got the show. But I played Don Ameche as well as I could. And then after I started the show, I weaned away from that so that in about a month's time I was playing myself. But I knew they wanted Don Ameche and nobody would ever have gotten the show.
Well, I think this is as good a point as any, Ed, to have another excerpt.
Well, this is another very rare show. In fact, this is probably the only copy that's in existence, and I got it from the Pioneers. This is a program called Light of the World from Chicago, and is written by, among others, Noel Gerson, one of our guests, who was a very good guest, as you remember. And Brett Morrison, again, was one of the performers in this particular show. And just for the newly initiated, this is a story dramatizing the Bible. So let's listen, shall we, Dick?
Life of the World, the story of
of the Bible, an eternal beacon lighting man's way through the darkness of time. This is our day-to-day story of the Holy Bible, presented as a living human monument to man's faith in God, reverently portrayed. Today we continue the story of Samson from the book of Judges, chapter 14, verses 1 and 3. And Samson went down to Timnath and saw a woman of the daughters of the Philistines. And Samson said unto his father, Get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. Samson's unhappy marriage to the pretty pagan girl Rita, a marriage that lasted only a week, marked the first fatal step toward his ultimate destiny. Now Samson is once more riding toward Rita's home. As he approaches the house accompanied by his friend Aaron, he stops abruptly, startled by the scene before him. On the terrace, there's a gay crowd of Philistine men and women. Tables are laden with food, while servants hurry from one group to another pouring wine. Puzzled, Samson leaves his horse with Aram outside the gates and walks slowly toward the garden where he sees Rita standing alone. Rita.
Anthony, it's really you.
Yes, I've come back. You aren't with your guests?
No, I wanted to be alone for a little while.
Oh.
Why have you come back, Samson?
To ask you if you can ever forgive me?
Samson,
I love you, Rita. I know you must be very angry with me. I should have listened when you tried to explain why you told Joplin the answer to the riddle. I should have trusted you.
You told me you'd never return. And you shouldn't have come.
I don't blame you for being angry, Rita. When I told my mother about our quarrel, she said I should have been more patient. She told me I hadn't tried to understand. She made me realize how wrong I was to leave you. I do love you, darling. Will you forgive me?
Thank you. Why didn't you come back? Why didn't you come yesterday?
Because I was so bitter. Because I thought I hated you, but...
Samson, it's too late. You've come back too late.
Well, why is it too late? Rita, these people sitting under the trees, drinking wine, eating. Why, Rita? Why are they here so soon after our wedding feast? Rita, why are they here?
They've come to another wedding feast.
Huh?
Oh, Samson, why didn't you come yesterday?
A wedding feast? Ah, your sister, Rita. Your sister's being married.
No, no, not my sister.
Then why? Rita!
Samson, when you left, everyone laughed at me. And I was very angry. And when Father decided that I should marry Joplin, I said I wouldn't.
But you're my wife.
Father said we weren't really married. You left me before the wedding feast was over. Our marriage has been dissolved by royal proclamation.
And now you've married Jackson?
Yes.
Well, it's delightful to hear that old program again. I do remember it. We'll get back to our guests in tonight's special program right after this message from our sponsor.
Get growing, you can count the difference when you're growing.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
With the ever-increasing cost of living, it's harder to save these days, yet it's more important than ever to make that extra sacrifice to save. Why? Because tomorrow's dreams will still be financed with today's savings. Cromwell Savings Bank suggests that whatever the amount, you save on a regular weekly basis. It's a good habit that you'll be thankful you acquired. Visit Cromwell Savings and inquire about any one of their six convenient savings plans.
You grow more with us.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell, member FDIC, where you can save now and save Saturday mornings from 9 to 12 noon. Plenty of free parking available. And now back to Ed Corcoran and Dick Bertel.
Well, Ed, let's talk more about the Pioneer Broadcasters of the Pacific. Where is the Pacific Pioneers Broadcasters located?
Well, it's in a very great place. It's on the same site as the NBC studios. As you know, they were torn down several years ago, and this bank put a building up here, the Home Savings, the largest in the country, by the way. And they turned over in the basement. It's really a very nice basement, by the way. I don't want to accommodate it to, you know, it's typical. And they gave them a complete good-sized room, probably a couple hundred, well, I don't know, very, very large, big as a basketball court anyway, as a permanent headquarters. And they keep all their recordings there, they have pictures there, and they have their meetings. So it's a very historic site. And then on the front of the building, they list all of the people who are on NBC, you know, like in a scroll as you go into the building itself. So there is a little bit of history in their location anyway, Dick. Yeah.
Well, they certainly were very gracious to you.
Well, I said just to be there was a great honor, Dick.
Well, we're honored to have you.
We're honored to be here.
Tell us a little about your radio program, Golden Age of Radio.
See, I never thought you'd ask.
I really would like to know something about it. Of course, we don't get it out here, you know.
Well, we'd like to syndicate it sometime if we could, but we haven't been, that's in the back of our minds. Mm-hmm. But it started about 4 years ago, and we were doing interview shows. Dick, I was his guest for a number of years, and then Dick Bertel. Mm-hmm. We always want to do our own show when we finally got the green light, and we started with local people. And we had Charles Harold, who directed Counter Spy and people like that. And then we got a real break. We got Bill Spear. Everything turned around. And, of course, Brett was one of our earlier guests, too. And when we got them, everything seemed to open up, and we were able to attract everybody in the business from that point on. So it's really been a great personal thing for us to
grow
from nothing. A little, Hartford is not Broadway or Hollywood and Vine.
But WTIC is a 50,000 water, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It covers New York, Massachusetts, and all of Connecticut. So we do get a pretty good listening area.
That's beautiful. Well, we love all the people listening to us, right?
Well, Connecticut was very nice to me. A couple of years ago, they invited me to be their first guest for their first annual Radio Buff convention that they had, and they honored me with a very nice plaque commemorating.
Yeah, we now call that the William Spear Memorial Award because he died the year after that.
He was going to win this.
We loved Bill Spear. He was just a
I worked on so when I'm fans
sorry,
and
when
a very vital person like Bill goes, you can't believe it.
You see, this is another reason why I am interviewing our friends as quickly as I can, because although you don't like to say this, I want to get them on tape before we lose them.
Yes, we had a couple of examples of that too. We interviewed Gertrude Berg. Mm-hmm. I didn't pick it. He had an interview show prior to that, and the tape was lost irretrievably. And he also did a few others like that. We did Horace McMahon.
Oh, my
And we
goodness.
Did the last interview that Bill Spear ever did. And also Johnny Gibson, he was the last
interview. Oh, yeah.
He was another
one. Oh, that lovely man.
Is Johnny
Johnny Gibson,
Johnny? No,
that's probably 6 years ago, isn't it?
Oh, dear. Yeah. Horace McMahon and I played in Detective Story on Broadway for a year and a half together. Yes. Dressed together, as a matter of fact.
All those guys have
We feel very sad about these things, but at least we have a record of them, you know, for all times.
Yes.
Particularly
yes.
Johnny Gibson was the last interview. And,
oh, he was a fun
He was really great.
A clear actor and a dear man.
Everybody loved him.
Yes, Les, maybe you can get copies of some of these.
It's a good thought.
I feel like we're part of this organization, really. The Eastern branch of the Pacific Pioneers.
You'll be more than welcome, won't we?
Yes, indeed. Oh, yes, anyway.
Well, you can't take it back. It's on the tape.
Join us.
It's true.
Love to.
Right.
Well, Vince, could you tell us a little more about your career? We haven't had a chance to go into it. Could you tell some of the shows you did or some of your experiences? Because, you were spoke so highly of it. I want to hear more about it here.
Well, come on, Vinny. Thank you for asking. But it seems to me, I don't know.
You're too much.
But try real hard.
Vinny and I work together a lot. In retrospect, I have memories of people more than any particular programs that I did. And actually, my share of any programs with which I was associated
was strictly in the role of an announcer.
Who are some
of these people? How much involved can an announcer be?
Well, Harry Von Zell got involved.
Yes, of course, Harry.
You're the only one.
But everyone thought of you when they thought of Carnation, really, because you put your own particular stamp on it.
We did Love Song before that, and
yes,
you read this
true.
Beautiful poetry, and I sang.
Brett and I, strangely enough, even though looking at him, I seem to be 10 years his senior.
No,
we shared many assignments in early radio. The Carnation Show in itself, which he mentioned earlier, when we were more or less announcer one, announcer two, and I guess to cut expenses or something, they decided Pelletier could fill both bills, and poor old Brett had to tell me,
then you had to split
by way of saying goodbye, you should wear elevator shoes, Vinny, because the people with whom you are associated are taller than you, and this would put you more on their level. And I thought that made a lot of sense, so I invested in a pair of elevator shoes. Now, that's not earth-shattering.
No, with your dignity, you didn't need them.
Well, that's true. I always felt as though I should.
Your stature is in.
No one can ever tell over the microphone how tall you were.
That's very true. An earlier reference was made to my having received some Diction Awards or something, and I'm disappointed. Not disappointed, really. What difference does it make? But I actually was not the recipient of any particular group awards for diction or announcing of particular shows or anything along those lines, except that I was fortunate enough to be chosen to do the role of the wordmaster in Speak Up America. That, to me, is one of the most satisfying achievements of my professional life, because I think the English language needed some sort of championing then.
Hear, hear.
And Lord knows
it needed
it needed more today.
And unfortunately, they couldn't care less. Yeah, but you know, I think one of the reasons they don't care anymore is because they have lost that marvelous influence that radio brought
right. That's exactly right.
They heard people like us, let's face it, speaking properly, and they tried to emulate us.
Yes.
The kids today, they have no one to listen to.
No, now they want
they
what
had
they call street types.
They had tests that two announcers took that were, they were really stiffy.
Oh, sure, you had to pronounce composers, Russian, French.
I heard a man the other day on a radio show in my car, that shall be nameless, who said something was bad, and he said, but badder than that. And by that time, I was practically hitting the car in front of me.
Yeah. Well, that's why Lou isn't speaking. Vinny, what are you doing now?
I have been crowned with the Golden Achievement Award.
Okay.
This is a mandatory policy in the conduct of business affairs by the networks, in which at the golden age of 65, you are given a watch casing. And
with no works?
They've been giving us the works over the years.
Am I a straight man or not?
A great straight man. And I'm delighted you picked me up on that.
I know what you were going to say.
Seriously, I am always happy to acknowledge the very pleasant associations I've had with the network.
Of course.
I was on the staff at NBC, as we mentioned earlier in this discussion, and I was finishing up my career at ABC when the mandatory retirement policy was invoked on old dad at the age of 65. And as I say, they say goodbye, we loved you, and they...
right when you get work.
Yes, yeah. I was going to say they did at least have the, what should I say, the sensitivity to give me a little party on the stage after the last news show that announced. And I think that's rather nice. I mean, after all, you're only a statistic in the broadcasting business anymore, unless one is blessed with the talent that you people have, and you become identities far and above what your name would...
We were all lucky, Vinny, if I may say so, and I think I can speak for all of us. We were born into a time when this brand new medium, which became so tremendous and died away in a matter of 25, 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Was killed. And that was killed.
True. Right. It isn't dead by far, but it was killed as far as dramatic radio is concerned. They wanted to sell television sets.
That's all. Yeah.
Well, Brett, have we covered your career? Right?
Well, I think so. I've done practically every daytime soap, I think, that was on the air at one time or another in some form. The things that I've most identified with is Mr. First Nighter in the First Nighter program and as the Shadow in the Shadow.
And what are you doing now?
Very little, but
anybody.
I'm able to sit up and take a little nourishment.
You feel all right, Nate?
Well, then we'll talk later.
But as I say, I'm acting when called upon to act. I'm in our answering service business when I'm not acting. And I'm enormously happy in my marriage, and I married a man who gave me 3 of the loveliest children and 10 of the loveliest grandchildren in the whole world. And that is the supreme joy.
Right. Well, nobody's asked me, right. But at this point...
I'm
terribly hurt. Terribly hurt.
Les.
If I can see through the tears, I'll wink my nose.
Tell us about yourself now.
Well, thank you, Vinny. Why, Vinny, how nice of you.
I know all about you, but I want other people to know what a great personality you have been over the years.
Well, that's true, Vinny, but... No, but I am very fortunate. I'm just about as busy as I ever have been, although in the old days of radio, like most of us, I did 45 shows a week for 2 solid years in Chicago. Mm. But right now, I have a new picture, of which I am the star, coming out the end of this month, or early March, called Holy Wednesday. I won't tell you any more than that, but it'll be in the drive-ins, probably. It's that kind of a picture.
It won't be an X-rated film.
No, no, no. I wouldn't be associated with one of those. I think that's highly reprehensible.
Not only that, it's beneath your dignity.
Quite true. I also have a TV series for children. This might interest the listeners back there, Ed. It's called Shazam. It's based on the old Captain Marvel series, and we're on Saturday mornings on Channel 2, and we're number 1 in the slot, and it's been renewed for another season. And I'm a spokesman for Ames Home Loan, which is a big loan company out here on camera and on radio. And I do various and sundry other jobs, you know. So I'm very busy, and I'm very active with AFTRA and the Pacific Pioneer Broadcaster. So, you know, all in all, I must say that I'm one of the luckiest guys in the world.
Well, I was very lucky, too, to land you out here and have you arrange this little meeting for us. And
I'm so glad you called me.
It's really been beyond the expectations. And to wrap this thing up, I can only, you know, say one thing, and I think the greatest sign-off in the world. Good night to you from Hollywood.
We do mean you.
Well, it was delightful hearing those voices, and they sounded so enthusiastic about the days of broadcasting as we remember them here on the program, and about our show as well, Ed. And I want to hear another of the excerpts that they provided us with right after this message from our sponsor.
Get growing. Get growing. You can count the difference when you're growing.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
Perhaps 1975 is the year you've decided to improve your home's exterior appearance. New plantings for the front yard, a new driveway, or that backyard patio you've always desired. Well, these too can be yours with a home improvement loan from the folks at Cromwell Savings Bank. Springtime is action time to visit them soon. They're open Monday through Wednesday, 9 to 3, Thursday, 9 to 5, Fridays, 9 to 7:30, Saturdays, 9 to 12 noon.
You grow more with us.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
Cromwell Savings Bank, member FDIC, and an equal housing lender, is located at Main and West Streets, Cromwell. And now back to Ed Corcoran and Dick Bertel.
Well, Ed, you've indicated that we have a gem to close out with tonight.
Yeah, this is the Coronation Hour, and that went through a lot of changes over the years. You know, it It was a very serious music program, but this particular one I feel is a little bit on the corny side, more like Lawrence Welk than Carnation. And Vincent Pelletier, one of our guests, is featured as the announcer. So I think you'll enjoy listening to this. It's really, I think, kind of funny, Dick.
Won't you wait till the cows come home? Won't you wait till the cows come home? Dear old contented bell and boss, soon the meadow they will cross, down the lane at the close of day. Once again they will wend their way, hear them in the bell, contented you can tell. Won't you wait, wait, wait by the old red gate? Won't you wait till the cows come home?
The Carnation Contented Hour, presented every Monday for more than 8 years by the producers of irradiated Carnation milk, the evaporated milk that is used by more people in the United States, in Canada, and throughout the world than any other brand. Tonight in this series of international nights, we're seeing America first. Here's our distinguished musical director, Joseph Pasternak, to lead the way with the Carnation Concert Orchestra, the Continental's Quartet and Chorus, the Lullaby Lady, and the Carnation Commentator. Join them as we fly in fancy to the land of sunshine and flowers, Florida. Forget that it's winter. The railways, highways, skyways, and waterways are pointing southward to a magic land of beckoning palm trees and warm, inviting sands, of tropical jungles and sky-blue lakes, of health and happiness beneath a friendly sky. That's Florida. And if we can't all go there, we can dream of being there to music.
Well, I've enjoyed listening to the Carnation Hour. I've enjoyed all of the excerpts tonight and our guests, Les Tremaine, Betty Lou Gerson, Brett Morrison, and Vincent Pelletier. And thanks so much for providing this program for us.
Well, I hope we can feature like Betty Lou in another program. We didn't have too much to do with her as far as excerpts, but maybe we can, in a future program, we can expand on these, because they're all very fine people and they did a lot of great things on radio, Dick.
They certainly did. Well, until next time, then, this is Dick Bertel.
This is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr.
The makers of Instant Chase and Sanborn Coffee present the Charlie McCarthy Show.
The golden age of radio has been brought to you by WTIC and Cromwell Savings Bank, located at Main and West Streets in Cromwell, a friendly bank in a friendly town. The golden age of radio was produced by Bill Grasty and Dick Bertel.
Good evening, friends of the inner sanctum. This is your host to welcome you in through the squeaking door to another...